Blog Talk Radio.
Within. Each time I look deeper into myself, I will find incredibly beautiful treasures within me. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and a big welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It is Thursday, November 18th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, like clockwork. Thank you for joining us, and we'd love to hear from you, so please call in to listen live or ask questions at 347-857-2710, or you can email me at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. That's vibe, V-I-B-E, goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Again, that phone number to dial in is 347-857-2710. Well, where to begin? Let's just face it. People, I've spoken to so many people out there, and what I'm hearing is that there are people in a lot of pain. People are suffering. There's no work, no health insurance, no money, and everyone has the same question: What can we do? Well, we can't wait for the government to help us, so we've got to start helping ourselves. And the one person that I know who can help us is known as the Silver Bullet, the business guru. His name is Peter Krause, and he is CEO of Interwoven, a business consulting company in Southern California, and has been coaching, advising, and mentoring business professionals for over 35 years. Peter has the ability to provide specific directives, very simple to execute set of instructions for improving your quality of life and realizing your dreams. And Peter is also the founder of Empower You Seminar. So we're going to get started. So please welcome a repeat guest to Blog Talk Radio, Peter Krause. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Lauren. How are you? I'm so happy to be here.
I'm happy that you're here, too, because it's lovely talking to somebody on the other end.
Well, thank you. I've been doing so much lately, I don't know where to start sometimes, but usually the best place to start is the first step. And most people never take their first step, so therefore they never get anywhere.
This is, I kind of want to explore why that is. You've had, as I said, 35 years of coaching people and mentoring people, and you give people directives. What prevents people from taking the advice and moving forward?
What I found is most people are not afraid of success. They're afraid of success.
Exactly.
In other words, they are doomed to success. They're not doomed to failure, and they're deathly afraid of success. And because that means their whole life's going to change. And so they wait, and they wait, and they wait for all the stars to line up. And it's very hard to line up the planets or line up all the stars. And they're already set into motion, and their direction is determined. So it's kind of like that for humans. Everyone is born with what they needed to realize their potential. And when they accept that and they use those resources instead of trying to find resources that are unavailable to them or traits or qualities that they don't even have, then they make real good progress. It's kind of like the story of David and Goliath. When David shows up at the battlefield, they offer him a shield, they offer him a sword, and he says, I don't know how to use these things. And so he says he's killed a bear, he's killed a lion. with his sling. So he pulls out his sling and he smots Goliath and knocks him over. In fact, there was even a centurion in front of him. So any obstacles that typically, you know, people, they usually put those obstacles in front of themselves, and they make things much more difficult than they need to be. Otherwise, they never set any real lofty goals. Most people aim low, and I always say if you don't aim high, if you aim low, you hit yourself in the foot.
And that would definitely prevent you from moving forward.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's hard to walk on your hands.
Well, true. I see it constantly. People just so fearful. What if the self-sabotage, trying to find ways in which something won't work before they even take a stab at it.
Exactly.
Now, you're talking about success. So, how did you know the path for yourself to take as a business consultant? Were you fearful?
Well, it's interesting because there's an expression that says a lack of choice makes best decision. And so, if you have no other option, then you just go in the direction that you can go in, and that's usually what I call the path of least resistance. And most people resist that path because they feel that there has to be some other path. Well, if there's no other path, there's only one path to be on. And I know I'm speaking in terms that seem kind of unusual, or, you know, it's like, you know, it sounds like gibberish, but it's not. If, for example, you're looking for something to eat and you open the refrigerator and your option is to eat the plastic molding or a piece of dry bread, you know, the path of least resistance, or the path that stands to give you some nutrient, is the dry bread. And so a lot of people look in the refrigerator and they see there's nothing there, but they see the, except for the dry bread, and they don't eat the bread. Now, eating the bread doesn't necessarily sustain you forever, but it'll give you another minute or two or 10 or an hour or whatever. And so in that time, something else can occur. But by virtue of the fact that they're thinking too far forward, they're really not thinking forward enough because they need to eat that bread. And the same thing is true when they're going out in their lives. They feel that they need a job. Well, you know, getting out of bed is the first step to getting a job, or, you know, showing up somewhere, or at least taking some step will make that difference. In today's world, you see a lot of people fretting about not having this or not having this, or there's less opportunity. Well, times of diversity create the greatest opportunities. So the truth is there's a lot more opportunity now than ever. However, that opportunity doesn't look like it looked before. It's completely different. And the path of least resistance is completely different. Many of the clients I work with have opportunities that are being presented to them, but they're saying no to them because they're waiting for a better opportunity. It's kind of like
how do you guide your clients to be able to see these opportunities? Because obviously we don't see them because we put up a wall because we're only looking for that one thing.
Exactly. Well, people figure that they have to go a certain way, and they listen to detractors who tell them that this is the only way to go or this is the only option. And so when we're sensitive to the opportunities, it's not just looking for them or hearing them. We have to make sure that all our senses are intact. And when your senses are keen, the thing to listen to the most is your instinct, because your instinct is the sum of your education, your experience, all the qualities you're born with. And if we trust our instinct, it tells us what to do when something presents itself, or it tells us what to do in any situation, and it's usually the right thing to do. I mean, I listen to people very often say that I wish I would have listened to what I was feeling. I always like to tell people that feelings are real, and thoughts, or what we can conceptualize in our brains, sometimes aren't necessarily that real. When we feel pain, that's real. When we feel fear, it's real. Now, then we have to look at it and say, well, is it founded or unfounded? and which way should we go? So, you know, our feeling changes then, and things become more clear. The path becomes more clear. If you take the first step, you achieve a new perspective. And from that perspective, you have additional information, which allows you to maybe figure out the next step and the next step after that and so forth and so on.
So as an example, for those people that are unemployed, how would you direct them to find employment in an economy where, from what you're saying, there is opportunity, but in a different form?
Well, when you're unemployed, it's who you know and what you know. And if you know someone, that helps. And so if the people that you know can't help you, you want to start introducing yourself to new people. And so we can meet a lot of people by getting out amongst people that can make a difference. And so most people, when they're unemployed, they go to a job search website. Well, the purpose of the job search website is to make money for the site. And so in most cases, most of the sites really don't have any jobs available. And the criteria is such that people that are looking for a job, they've already exhausted those resources, can't find them. And so what they need to do is start knocking on doors and using tactics that are different. Like I say, the first step is to introduce themselves to new people. And the best way to do that is in person. By doing it by email, doing it by any other method, is so impersonal. And in most cases, it doesn't create as much opportunity as personal selling does, or selling yourself personally. So, like I say, the first step is to get out of bed, go meet people, talk to people, let them know that you're looking for work. Often people are looking for a job online, and they never bother to tell the grocery clerk that they're looking for a job. They never bother to tell people that they think might not be able to help them, but those people may be interacting with somebody that's looking for exactly the talents and skills that you have. There are no shortages of tactics that we can use. If somebody else is directing you, it's a lot easier, because that way you're not fretting about, am I doing the right thing, am I doing the wrong thing, am I doing this or that or that. Anything you're doing is going to be the right thing, because it's going to eliminate situations that aren't going to help you, and it's going to increase the probability of success.
I feel sometimes with the advent of technology that a lot of maybe the younger generation, their social skills are a little awkward. And because in talking to some people that I know, they don't know what to say. What do I say? Because they're not used to speaking extemporaneously, or they're not confident within themselves. And I think that's a hesitation for people to perhaps take this route, because they want to be perfect at it.
There are a lot of things that will keep people from success, but any action they take is going to help. And Cortez used to say, and St. Paul always said, action cures fear. And so if they have fear, if they're tentative, if they don't have experience, they need to take action. And people need to ask for help. What I do often is hold people's hands. I take them one step at a time. And so if they can be shown and they can see how, you know, what the consequences are, what happens by virtue of taking the action, then they realize, well, that wasn't so difficult. I can do that. Or they see what the reaction is, and they begin to understand, you know, they learn something new. They learn how to approach something in a different way. Yeah, what's happening today is everybody's being told to throw paper over a wall. And somehow...
So people do it.
Exactly. And yeah. See, I think that one of the ways that's... and again, everybody thinks that the only way to find a job anymore is to go online, to send an email, to do something that's very impersonal. Most companies, my clients, my major clients, they'll get 3,000 to 10,000 resumes for legitimate job posting. And so how do you differentiate one resume from another? I mean, do they really look that different, especially when everybody is copying everybody else in terms of what they're putting in a resume and how they're presenting a resume. And so in most cases, the person who actually shows up at the company, who actually knocks on a door or purposely tries to meet somebody from that business in a creative way, they're more likely to get the job. Now, we're told not to show up. Well, if you want to live by everybody else's rules, that's how you live. And I tell my client that they need to live by their own rules and to show up, to go to trade shows where there are lots of companies, or to do something that nobody else will do. I mean, if they run past a company naked, streaking, they're more apt to get a lot more attention than they are by sending a resume with 3,000 to 10,000 other people.
I think you said the word naked, and somebody called in to ask a question. So let's go to our caller and have them join our interesting conversation. Hello, you're on the line with Peter Krause and Lauren.
Hello, Peter and Lauren. This is
Hello.
Zach.
Hello. Hello, Zach.
Hello, Lauren.
Hello, Zach. So you've been tuning in to this interesting conversation.
Well, it's something that you and I actually have been talking about, was being more active in one's own life rather than following the rules or giving our resume away. I like Peter's line about throwing the paper over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you meant, Peter.
Exactly. In other words, you're in the process, you're kind of devaluing yourself, and if you don't get a response, you say, well, why didn't they respond?
Right. They always play the victim.
Exactly. And you can be a lot more proactive about the process and give people one line of your resume at a time. Seduce the potential.
I kind of like that. One line at a time.
One seduction at a time.
Exactly.
Exactly.
See, it's interesting because if you look at how people tend to try to give things away to try to get something in return, especially when they're giving something away to someone that's not even interested. And so what's much more powerful is if you approach it from the standpoint that I'm extremely valuable. I teach some classes at UCLA Extension. And what I tell my students is that if someone chooses not to hire you, that when you leave the interview or when you stop talking to the individual, tell them they're making the biggest mistake they ever made in their life.
Or give them the finger.
Well, you could do that, too.
That'll get their attention.
Absolutely. And so, you know, everybody will say, oh, my God, I'll never be able to come back. And well, chances are you'll be remembered that way. At least they'll remember you as being the person that actually challenged them and suggested some alternative.
Yes.
We become a society of people that are all too quick to submit. To become mediocre, to become invisible, to become irrelevant.
It's so much easier.
Absolutely, but
it's safe, it's convenient, it's familiar, and it's fast.
Well,
you get immediate gratification.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. But one thing for sure is that there is no shortage of opportunity, and if you find yourself at the right place at the right time. And the best way to do that is to take a lot of shots at goal, like Wayne Gretzky says. And so when you see an opening, you shoot. And most people are waiting for a better opportunity.
Yes.
You know, if you listen to all the basketball players, they say that you don't wait once you get an opening because you don't know when you're going to have a better shot.
Well, people
I was going to say Patrick Rafter, one of the last serve and volleyers in tennis, said, he says, I don't have to win 100% of the points. If I win 55% of the points and play the way I want to play, I'm probably going to win. But I have to take that risk.
Exactly.
And the risk of not being perfect, but the risk of being sitting in that 55% range. And it's scary because players want more gratification faster.
Well, like you said, mediocrity feels more comfortable because everybody's doing it.
Yeah, and what you're talking about is immediate gratification. And see, it's interesting because we can have everything we want. We can have immediate gratification.
Absolutely.
And
right now.
Exactly.
And I'm feeling it.
And like, for example, if you're looking for a job and you want a job immediately, you know, you get on the tallest building and you scream out as loud as you can and let everybody know that you're looking for a job. And, you know, you can even say that you're desperately in need of a job. Now, will somebody help you? Chances are they'll give you a job. It may not be the job you want right away, but it'll be a job, and it might be the job you want right away. There was a woman in Orange County who decided to put on a breadboard and stand on the busiest intersection, put on her business suit, and let everybody know that she was looking for work, and put her basic credentials on that breadboard, and she got job offers. Now, how many other people were willing to do that? She got immediate gratification closer to immediate gratification because she did something that nobody else was willing to do. Now, she was in an area where there's a high probability that the kinds of people that would stand to hire her would be driving, and they were driving past that intersection all day. I mean, you could get on a freeway overpass. I always suggest people going to trade shows where you might have as many as 5,000 exhibitors that are potential employers. You can go from booth to booth, and in 15 seconds, you can do a job interview. And again, I'm just tossing out tactics that most people might not do. And if people don't have the courage or the resolve to do that, what they need to do is hire somebody to take them or hire a hitman or something. Finding a job.
Or take a nap.
Exactly.
I mean,
they can take a nap and pay somebody else to do it. But
people often have a difficult time at the one-on-one because they're not sure how to handle the interview.
And no one really knows what to say. I mean, there are a lot of people that will say, this is what you have to say, or this is how you have to handle the interview. Machiavelli says, many paths lead to the same end. And in every interview situation, things could be different. Sometimes you walk into an interview and they offer you the job. Sometimes you walk into an interview and they bring up questions that are completely unrelated to what you might be doing. You could spend all kinds of time preparing, but the results are going to be predicated on things beyond your control anyway. For example, I once told someone that I was studying for a test, and they said, what kind of test were you studying for? And I said, well, I was studying for my physical exam, for my doctor's exam. And they said, well, you can't do that. I said, well, everybody else says you have to be prepared for these various exams. And so I figured maybe if I studied, I could do better on my physical exam. That's basically the way it is for interviews. We can prepare, sure. It makes sense to look nice. It makes sense to have something in your quiver. And what I mean by that is, Any preparations you make, you know, putting a resume together, getting your references together, doing things like that and putting them in a quiver, allows you to pull out the right arrow if it's needed during the interview.
Well, I've often heard you say, Peter, that once you get in the door, I guess I'm referring to it as a sales call, but I think of interviewing as kind of a sales call because you're selling yourself. That you just have to close the deal.
True. And see, we can't know what the other person really needs or wants until we have an opportunity to talk to them. And so probably the best thing anybody could do is walk in the door and ask for the job. Because that's usually what, you know, you do in a sales call. Now, people tend not to ask for the order, or they tend not to ask for the job. You know, I always liked the way car salesmen...
They ask to be liked?
Well, they ask to be liked, but whether or not you're liked has nothing to do
with...
Right,
that's what I'm saying. That the tendency is to want to be liked rather than get the job.
True, true.
That they want to get approval before they get the job.
And that happens a lot. I mean, the idea is to get the job, and sometimes asking for the job is what gets it for you.
Yes.
Even begging for the job or again, streaking by or whatever you need to do. You know, I was going to mention the way car salesmen sell cars. They tell you, what is it going to take to put you in this baby? And so they're basically saying, you know, what do I need to do? And the guy in what's his name?
Cal Worthington.
He's always said, you know, I'm going to stand on my head to beat all deals. And so here's a guy who's going to do whatever he needs to do to get the job, or get, you know, in his case, sell the car.
I tried Cal Worthington many years ago. It didn't work. I found a better deal.
He didn't stand on his head long enough.
He didn't stand on his head. Nope.
But you went there because of it. Why did you
I
go
went
there
initially? Because I went there because of the pitch.
I said I needed
a car and funds were low, and I said he's offering a better deal than anyone else. I said let me see if I can take him up on his offer.
See, Cal Worthington might have become complacent in his old age because when he was a young boy standing on the corner of in a dirt lot in Huntington Park, when he sold the first car, he was motivated to sell that car. And so his father said he could have $200 if he sold the car. So he stood out there in his cowboy outfit, and he stood on his head, and before you know it, people came by because they were wondering what he was doing out there, and they saw that he was selling the car, and he sold the car in no time. So he must have sold it at the right price, because nobody will buy anything at any price that they're not interested in. I mean, you might be able to get them to buy something once, but you won't get them to
come back.
Don't build any annuities, right? And if you go to a car dealer and you want to do, you know, you want a certain deal and they're not willing to give you that deal, you go to the next one.
Yes.
And that's
and
true
the same
too.
Thing with getting a job.
Exactly. Exactly. A lot of times
it's all a number. It's all a numbers game, no matter what, no matter whether it's getting it in front of thousands of people, telling your story and going on to the next and not worrying, oh, did anybody hear what I had to say? It's just moving forward until it hits.
Exactly. I mentioned earlier that students of mine have told me that, you know, Mr. Krause, you're the only one that tells us there are jobs available and you connect us with people that hire us. And why is it that no one else can do this? And it's because they fall into the trap of believing that that there are no jobs. Well, every day we have a job, if no other job, then to find a job, to find work. Those of us who spend our lives in sales and business realize that we're constantly having to generate new business, and that there is no, absolute sameness. In other words, things don't remain the same forever. And if they did, that would be awful because there would be no new opportunity. Well, again, right now, I've never seen so much opportunity. And in terms of what's happening in the marketplace or happening in the world, there's so much monopoly. There's so much sameness. There's so much mediocrity. The products are awful. In the banking community, for example, when I was a young boy, I got a checking account with a 6% interest. And today you go to a bank and the banks are offering...
I hope you still have that checking account.
Guaranteed forever.
<That's>
there
right.
You go. And see, what's interesting is that today you can't find those kinds of deals. So that creates an incredible opportunity for a new bank. There's opportunity like crazy. You know, a lot of people thought that a company like Blockbuster would never have any competition. And here comes Netflix. And people think that technology changed the playing field for Blockbuster and Netflix, and that's why Netflix was able to win or win more. But the truth is it had everything to do with late fees. People didn't want to pay late fees. And so you know how they always say there's a new mousetrap. Well, there's an opportunity for people to reinvent themselves, to offer a better mousetrap, to offer a better solution, to do something different. And I guess my point is that if we're able to listen and hear and recognize what it is that's needed out there and see or go, whatever, all our senses. I was talking about using all our senses to bring about a better result. Then we'll feel something different. We'll feel what somebody needs. If someone's house is burning down, if you show up with a hose, you're going to have a job.
Well, people practice, like you're saying, practice sales prevention. Here's a perfect example. I was going to purchase tickets at a local theater for a show. The person, I asked what the best available seats were. He says, we don't have anything. He says, I have tickets for subscribers, but we're holding on to them. And I mentioned to the box office salesperson, I said, you're keeping those tickets hostage, aren't you? He said, yes, we are. It infuriated me because as a consumer, I was willing to pay top dollar for a ticket, but they were waiting for gold-plated business. They didn't hear that I wanted to buy tickets. And I think that's what a lot of businesses do. They sell a particular item or two, and you want something else, and they don't hear that you're throwing them a buy sign for something else. And instead of saying, oh, yes, we'll get you hamburgers, but we only sell shoes, it's not a problem, that I'm more likely to buy the shoes if they get me my hamburger.
And that's back to the whole discussion about taking the path of least resistance.
Exactly.
See, there are lots of, in every way, there are lots of opportunities. What most people need is they need some help. They need some mentoring. They need a pilot to take them down the path if they don't know what to do. And in 35 years, I've worked with a lot of people, and I've asked, the question from the beginning is, what constitutes success? Why does one person succeed? Why does another person not succeed? And I've looked at, the lives of successful people and what is it that made them successful? Well, what makes people successful is good advice. Being able to know what to do when they don't know what to do. And so they need to seek out that advice. And if any of your listeners are looking for work, they need to find people who can tell them absolutely that they're going to help them find work. If any of your listeners are looking to start a business or to improve their circumstances, personally or otherwise, that's why we have professional coaches today. That's why we have consultants and advisors. Now, you want to be able to differentiate between those people who can actually help you succeed or the people I call charlatans. Professional produces results, and they have a gauge of results. They have a history of results. When you ask them for help, they can guarantee that you'll find a job, that your business will succeed. The charlatans are those people who know that what they're going to advise you to do is not going to work. They'll take your money, and if you don't succeed, they're going to blame you. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense.
Yes, because there's a lot of charlatans out there.
Yeah, but
exactly.
My resistance is that when somebody promises me something like that, I run.
Well, see,
I don't think someone can promise that.
On the contrary, when a professional promises you a result, I'll give you an example. Would you go to a brain surgeon that says they're 3 for 5? Would you go to a lifeguard who says he's 2 for 5? Would you go to an auto mechanic that says they're 1 for 5? And see, the same thing's true for an advisor, or a consultant, or a guide, or a teacher, or anyone like that. They know that what they're going to ask you to do is going to produce a result. And they know that because they've been down the channel before. Now, I understand what you're saying about it causes concern. And that's why you ask them for a reference.
I could ask for references all the time. I'm not going to give them a mediocre reference.
Of course not. And the thing is that what you want to do is start with something small. Often what happens with my clients, for example, is they feel that I'm promising something that I can't deliver. And so I'll give them a reference, and that won't be good enough. It doesn't matter how much success you have, they'll want something else. So say, well, let's do something small. Let's start with one step. And here's what's going to cost you, and if you don't feel that you've gotten your money's worth, then you can have your money back. See, a professional in any field guarantees the consequence. They know that it's going to happen. For example, I've never, ever had a client that didn't succeed. And so people will say, well, how can you guarantee success? Well, I use the skills and the qualities that the people have rather than trying to get them to use skills and qualities and things they don't have. That's why I told the story about David and Goliath. David knew he was going to succeed. He stepped up in front of Goliath, and he knew he was going to take him out, because all it took was a rock to kill a bear. All it took was a rock.
Hard to use a Bible story. But
what's that?
It's hard to use a Bible story.
True, but I mean, it's a story that everybody can understand. When you use a real story, for example, I have a student that came to me and said that she can't find a job. And she's been looking forever. So I said, call this person, and they'll give you a job. And that person was one of my clients. And so my client is always telling me, we can't find good people. And good people are always saying they can't find a good job. Now, if they go to some other job search agency and pay somebody, you know, I call them charlatans, they're not going to guarantee them a job because they're not professionals. That's the point I'm trying to make. They're amateurs.
But nobody ever guarantees, I mean, anything like that, and I can understand Zach's point of view.
Again, they do, and forgive me, I'm making the point. A professional is someone who guarantees results. If you go to your auto mechanic and say to your mechanic, do you think you can fix my brakes? And the auto mechanic says, well, I don't know. There's a chance I might be able to, and there's a chance I won't. Would you give them any money? And so why would you give money to any other professional who feels that somehow that what they're going to advise may only have a 1 in 100% chance of working? That's ridiculous. And see, we need to hold every professional to that standard. In other words, if you're an auto mechanic and a professional, you get paid for what you do, you have to produce results. My students are dumbfounded because I'm always getting them connected to people who are hiring. And so I don't send anybody to someone who doesn't stand to hire. And I put them in positions or give them tactics or actions that have a high probability of success. And it's a probability that it's going to result in success quickly. And I know,
I ask people to reduce their to broaden their definition of success, so that they can always be successful.
Well, I think it's pretty clear. For example, in today's world, we're talking about people getting jobs. I think it's pretty clear when somebody wants a job, they want a job. And say they're going to pay somebody to help them find a job or to pay somebody to get them a job, I think that they're entitled to get a job. That's really what they're looking for.
Zach, the type of advice that you provide for your clients on the tennis court is guaranteed in a sense. Having worked with you, I feel that. You didn't necessarily tell me I guarantee success. There was a perception on my part that I understood that working with you, I would be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel in some form or another, that it would be a successful experience.
Well,
am I wrong?
Yeah. I'm thrilled that that's what you go there available to get. I would not promise that.
Well, you didn't promise me anything.
No, I know that.
But I'll give you an example. I'm a rower. That's my sport. And I coach rowing. And I can guarantee anyone that if I coach them that they'll row faster. And that's because I have a lot of experience with, you know, thousands of rowers. And I've watched what they do, and in most cases there's simple changes they can make that'll improve their performance. For example, in rowing, how you hold the oar determines how well they row. I'm sure in tennis, how you hold the racket would probably affect your game.
Affect, yes.
And so, for example, in rowing,
better we don't know.
Well, for like in rowing, I know that many people, when they hold the oar, they cock their wrist. Their wrist is not flat with their forearm. And so by virtue of doing that, they're going to not get 100% of that. When they pull the oar, they're not going to be able to pull it 100%. Now, if they straighten their hand, their forearm to be level with the top of their hand, then all of a sudden they're able to pull at 100% and they can go a little bit faster. there are other things, I mean, that I've picked up over time that have enabled me to help people to improve their performance immediately because they're not necessarily paying attention to those aspects of the sport. The same thing's true in business. That's why I say, I know that when people send out a resume online, let's say they go on Monster or any other of the job sites, they send out a resume, the probability is very, very low because of the number of people that are sending resumes to those for those jobs. But if they're one of two people who show up for a job that is available, then their probability goes up. Now, if I can send them somewhere where there's a high probability or someone has told me that there's a job and I know they're suited to that job, that improves the probability, improves the likelihood, so I can make a much better guarantee.
Yeah, I can guarantee a beginner that they will get better.
Mm-hmm.
That would be as far as I could ethically go.
Mm-hmm.
I know that if they hit more tennis balls, there's a very good chance that they will get better.
What I've found in my business is that even, and again, in coaching as well, in coaching rowing or coaching business, it doesn't matter what level they are. Chances are they don't have as much experience as I do. They don't have as much data as I do, and I'm going to have something for them to improve their performance. Like in my consulting practice, I've had over 10,000 clients in every possible kind of business. In terms of sales, I've made over 80,000 person-to-person sales calls, and I have the notes from all of them, and I've reviewed them. And being a physicist and a mathematician, what I do is I analyze them. I look at the data and try to figure out, what is the wisdom from this? What's the takeaway that's going to enable me to produce a better result? It's a form of analysis that we use in science to be able to produce much better consequences. And like I've done the same thing in rowing. I've looked at video. I've looked at what worked and what didn't work, and what is universally applicable. So all those methodologies or all of those tactics can be implemented. Now, the other thing that I mention a lot is that we have to look at the individual. And everything that anybody does, if we look at that individual and utilize their skill set and utilize what makes them better or different, then we can produce a much better result. And just applying a bunch of tactics, because like I say, no two people can use the same method and produce the same result.
Right, but I think Peter, your suggestion of hand holding people, most people, it's the best way for people to get an idea of what they need to do for themselves, because people can't visualize when you suggest certain tactics. You have to go and show them how it works, how to be. People don't know how to be who they are, you know, and just go with the flow and speak off the cuff. So it's best to introduce himself. And I must say, I've thoroughly enjoyed this menage a trois. And there's my
thanks, Lauren.
Friend.
Well, thank you very much to both of you.
Thank you, Zach. It's been lovely having this little tete-a-tete. And Peter, I want to give everyone your contact information, which is interwoven@earthlink.net. And, wow, you've put a little fire under my little derriere this afternoon to move forward.
Don't throw it over the fence, Lauren. I'm going to use that tomorrow.
You're going to use that tomorrow? I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I think you should.
I'm going to. Thank you, Peter. I appreciate that.
It was a pleasure to have you join in. I appreciate the perspective because sometimes I can focus on certain things, but I like to have other people see things from a different perspective. And you added that perspective for me. Thank you. I'm going to have to send you a check for that.
Well, Lauren has my address.
There you go.
thank you. I'm glad to join you and glad to meet you finally.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Lauren. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks, Peter. I'm inspired. I want to thank you again, interwoven@earthlink.net. Like to contact Peter for his pearls of wisdom. And I want to thank everybody for joining in today, and hopefully you will be joining me next time when my mystery guest will be. I have no idea. That's how we roll here. So we'll see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes, and a big happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.